Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Tuesday, April 15th. I'm Olivia Rose. The Alaska legislature passed a bill Friday that would boost per-student education funding by $1,000. The bill now advances to Governor Mike Dunleavy, who has said he plans to veto it. In an 11-9 vote last Friday morning, the Senate passed a stripped-down version of House Bill 69, removing all policy items and leaving only the funding increase. Later that day, the House passed the amended bill 21-16. Three Senate majority members, including Sitka Republican Senator Bert Stedman, voted against the bill. Stedman said he supported increasing education funding, but that he didn't see how this funding would fit into a balanced budget.
We also have to have a balanced budget by the Constitution. And it's very difficult when we're already $200 million underwater to fit this in and make it work.
In an interview with KCAW yesterday, Sitka Independent Representative Rebecca Himshute said funding Alaska's public schools is also a constitutional obligation.
The Constitution doesn't say we should maintain our schools when we have the money to do it. We are obligated to maintain our schools.
Governor Mike Dunleavy called the bill a, quote, joke and said he will veto the bill. Himshute, who sponsored the bill, said that's not necessarily the end.
We have the opportunity to override. We still have a month of session left. There's a lot. There's a lot we can still do.
The amended version of House Bill 69 now goes to the governor. A veto override would require a two-thirds vote from the legislature. The Norwegian Bliss and its more than 4,000 passengers arrived in Juneau yesterday to kick off the capital city's 2025 cruise ship season. Juneau city officials say tourism this year is uncertain, but as KTOO's Clarice Larson reports, visitors and vendors are starting the season with optimism.
The familiar sound of tourists chatting on the seawalk, shuttle buses in the street, and chicken sizzling at Bernadette's barbecue fills the air Monday afternoon. That's as thousands of visitors funnel off the first cruise ship of the year and into Juneau to kick off the 2025 cruise ship season. Throughout the afternoon, tourists meandered down the seawalk, into downtown stores, and to the Mendenhall Glacier. Patricia Cespedes was headed to the Gold Belt Tram with her sister. She's from Peru, but currently lives in Los Angeles.
Oh, it was always in my wish, but I really wanted to come and see Alaska. It always looks so beautiful. It was in my bucket list.
Another visitor, Debbie Ohl of Pennsylvania, says she's on her way to catch a bus to the Mendenhall Glacier. She says she purposely booked a trip early into the season.
I took the cruise because I want to see glaciers and I want to see wildlife and I want to see mountains with snow and that, you know, anything they have to offer because I love winter. Winter's my favorite.
This blustery spring day might feel like a winter day for some visitors coming from down south, as cold rain drizzled down on the docks. Tyrone Payne with Juneau Tours says sales have been great, and there haven't been any hiccups.
Yeah, we sold out of our whale watches immediately in less than an hour, and all of our times for the shuttle have been sold out already. We only have one time left for the day, so sales have been going really well.
City officials have warned of economic uncertainty this season. That's amid the Trump administration's tariffs and recent federal firings that could impact the operation of the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center, which is Juneau's most popular tourist attraction. Out at the glacier, staff greet the tourists who trickle in.
It's my very first minute. How do you like that?
It's Sonny Leanna Wallace's first day greeting the public as a cultural ambassador.
Hello.
And she's excited to talk to the visitors.
Do you need any help finding anything?
Nugget Trail's right up here, right?
Yes. Just follow the sidewalk.
The ambassadors were hired by the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska to share indigenous language, history, and culture with tourists. This year, they may serve a larger role at the glacier after the Trump administration's federal firings left the Forest Service's presence at the glacier in flux. Cultural Ambassador Supervisor Anka Dachstein, Jeremy Timothy, says he's excited to see how the first day goes so they can prepare for the rest of the season.
You know, we're going to do the best we can with what we got, and
I'm feeling very optimistic about it.
There won't be any staff at the glacier on Saturdays, however. And Timothy says he doesn't know what that means for visitors.
You know, I mean, we've gone through quite a bit of hardships and things back and forth, but, you know, I'm hoping that things kind of turn out in a positive aspect for us.
But on Monday, the people coming off the buses are enchanted by the glacier, like Basilia Quintero from Mexico. She's a little overcome by the view and the cold weather, but she says not even her imagination prepared her for the glacier.
The things that I'm seeing today, sorry, I have the mouth frozen. Not even in my dreams.
Juneau is expected to see around 1.65 million passengers come off ships between now and late October when the season ends. The next ship, the Carnival Spirit, will arrive on Friday. With help from Yvonne Crumry, I'm Clarice Larson in Juneau.
South Central and Kodiak Island residents are preparing for the likely eruption of Mount Spur, a volcano about 80 miles west of Anchorage. But the potential impacts of that will pale in comparison to the largest volcanic eruption in the 20th century, the 1912 Nova Rupcha Katmai eruption. Ash from that event over a century ago still affects residents on Kodiak Island to this day. KMXT's Davis Hovey has this story.
If Mount Spur erupts, scientists say the amount of ash fall that hits South Central and Kodiak Island communities will depend on several factors. Still, any amount of ash will likely ground flights, darken the sky, and potentially pose health risks to those with respiratory issues. Even if the worst-case scenario occurs, Kodiak residents won't experience anything close to what happened in 1912. More than 100 years ago, a village called Sovanoski sat in what is now Katmai National Park and Preserve, at the foot of Mount Katmai. The village was used traditionally as a subsistence fishing site for salmon. But in 1912, the Nova Ruptu Katmai eruption forced residents out of their village and across Naknek Lake. Teddy Melganek's parents were among them.
Sparks, you could see them, sparks in the air. And a lot of ash in the ground. Ground gets so hot. They say you can't even lay down on the ground and you can't go to sleep. It gets warm.
Melganek recounted his experience for University of Alaska Fairbanks oral history program in 1998. He said many elders at the time thought it was the end of the world. In historical accounts the National Park Service collected, witnesses said the ash fallout darkened the sky around Katmai for 3 days. Roughly 100 miles away in Kodiak, ash completely filled the air and plunged the city into darkness, forcing residents to take shelter on the U.S. revenue cutter Manning. Much of that ash remains in the Valley of 10,000 Smokes to this day and occasionally gets resuspended in the air by strong northwesterly winds. Hans Schweiger, a research geophysicist with the Alaska Volcano Observatory, says the resuspension is due to an enormous amount of volcanic ash in the area where there is not much vegetation to hold it down in the soil. That's unlike the area around Mount Spur.
That's partly the reason why there's just this almost unlimited source region. But, you know, as things age, a lot of the fine material can get sort of blown away. These sort of resuspension events can happen with any sort of primary deposit as well. So like when Spur erupted in 1992, there was remobilization and resuspension of ash in the Anchorage area for a couple weeks afterwards.
But in this case, ash from the 1912 Nova Rupta Katmai eruption continues to hit the west side of Kodiak Island, roughly 65 miles away. That ash has drifted to Larson Bay and Karluk at least 4 times in the last month. Although the air quality has not been significantly impacted recently, the resuspended ash affects local aircraft that regularly fly passengers from Kodiak to Larson Bay, Karluk, and other communities around the archipelago. Eric Howard directs operations at Island Air. He says their 2 flights to Larson Bay were canceled on Monday, April 7th, due to resuspended ash.
The big thing for us is when you do get those strong westerly winds, typically the ash will be worse on the west side of the island. So when we're operating to some of the float stops over there and then the villages of Larson Bay and Karluk are usually the ones that get affected by it the most, though I have seen it where it can come all the way up here towards town and affect all flights.
He says it seems like ash is blowing to the island more often this spring due to the lack of a winter snowpack. Schweiger, the geophysicist, agrees. He says there does not seem to be an end in sight for this volcanic phenomenon.
I think there's probably enough there so that it's going to continue to blow around for the rest of my lifetime.
But Schweiger adds that it will depend on how much revegetation can occur in that area containing all the ash in the coming years. Alaska Volcano Observatory and the National Weather Service will continue to monitor resuspended ash from the 1912 Nova up to Katmai eruption and issue advisories in the interest of public health, such as air quality advisories or warnings for local aviators when warranted. For the latest information about this or Mount Spur, go online to the Alaska Volcano Observatory website. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey.
A mysterious sea creature lurks in the icy waters just beyond the Arctic ice shelf. That's the Inuit legend depicted in a song that Mirror Lake and Greening Middle School band students will premiere in Anchorage. Alaska Public Media's Tim Rocky brings us this story from band practice.
Eighth graders in Greening band director Philip Walter's class are rehearsing Kalupalik. It's a brand new song about a green-skinned sea creature who sings a siren song to lure children to the water's edge. Walter says it's one of the first opportunities for his students to work with professional musicians since the COVID-19 pandemic. He says he usually buys the pieces his students perform, but he started wondering if there was another option.
I was thinking, I wonder how much it would cost to commission a composer to write a piece of music. And so I looked into it a little bit, I asked around, and it didn't seem like it was out of the realm of possibility. So I just started contacting my favorite composers, and I got in touch with Brian, and he was like, yeah, I can do it.
Brian is Brian Balmages, a composer who's more used to debuting his pieces in large concert halls than the halls of a middle school. His compositions have been performed in Carnegie Hall and the Sydney Opera House, and he'll direct Kalupalik in the Chugach High School Auditorium. He's conducted in 46 of 50 states and will now cross Alaska off his list. He says he only gets to attend about half the premieres he writes, but he's looking forward to spending a full day preparing his music with the combined bands ahead of the concert.
My goal is to provide them the biggest amount of growth that I can. And my goal is when I leave there, I want them to want more, right? I want them to want more music, more band, more opportunities to feel like that and to hopefully pursue those things.
About 100 students make up the combined band from Greening and Mirror Lake. This is a new experience for them. They've never debuted an original composition before. Walters is careful about rehearsing the piece with his students, leaving room for Balmages to make his mark in an upcoming rehearsal.
All right, take it easy. 81, please, 81. We're back in three. Here we go. 1, 2, 3, 81, and.
Asked about the difference in writing for younger musicians, Balmages likens it to a visual artist illustrating, but with a smaller box of crayons. He says he's more nervous about the potential eruption of Mount Spur than he is about hearing eighth graders premiere his music to the world.
The next Taylor Swift is out there, right? The next Mozart is out there. These people are out there, and they're in our middle schools right now. And the opportunity to go out there and work with them and potentially have an impact that changes their mindset and their way they interact with music, it's such a big part for me.
Mirror Lake flautist Kaya Christie plays a critical part as the flute section drives the eerie notes that make up the Kalupalik siren song. She started playing her instrument in sixth grade and says she's been looking forward to performing the piece since she heard about it last year.
It's kind of like I'm in shock because I would never expect something that I chose in sixth grade would take me this far to become an eighth grader and have an actual composer that many of us know come and compose us a piece and direct us through music.
Greening French horn player Tristan Matthews says the opportunity to premiere this piece of music has him excited about his potential future as a musician.
It's like a once-in-a-lifetime experience to be able to play a commissioned piece for the first time ever. It's really cool thinking that I'm going to be the first one to perform this.
When Balmages publishes the piece next year, Greening and Mirror Lake will be credited as the first bands to perform the piece when other school groups purchase the arrangement.
All right, cool.
That's what the monster sounds like?
That's the monster.
In Anchorage, I'm Tim Rocky.
For KFSK, I'm Olivia Rose.